Wizard of Whiskey presents Swig and Ramble, a podcast for the modern age. Introducing your hosts, Justin Corey at Wizard of Whiskey, Nicole Woolsey and Violet Smith. When the lights go down, the bullshit shows up.
And welcome back, all you ramblers. Welcome back to yet another episode of Swig and Ramble. Come for the queso, stay for the shit show. So let's jump right in with our beautiful, voluptuous, racy co-host, Mr. Gore. And of course, Nicole's here too. What's up, kids?
Oh, doing awesome, Justin. We're off to a great start this week, and you know, only enormous number of things to complain about. So, you know, I'm sure we'll have plenty of things to discuss.
Awesome. Awesome. How are you today, Nicole?
Oh, I'm good. It's a beautiful day here in Utah. Awesome. And it's my day off, so even better.
What day off?
Nice. Take that when you can get it.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump right in. What's souring our mash this week? What, Aaron, what do you got, man? What sours your mash?
Oh, man. So I got to tell you, like, we're drinking some delicious stuff today. You know, I didn't exactly start out with the peach Monster energy drink like Nicole. I'm feeling a little left out here. But, you know, I have one of my favorite glasses. Anybody can see it. You know, that's a nice TARDIS on there. I'm a massive Doctor Who fan. You know what's really pissing me off is the fact that we still haven't gotten a good answer on if Doctor Who's coming back. Is that necessarily changing the entire world? No, but it sure as hell is changing mine. And if they don't bring that show back, I will riot, and we need to do an entire episode where I'm just ranting for an hour on what a travesty that would be.
Hey, listen, don't hate me, but I told my husband that I feel like Doctor Who is the grown-up version of Power Rangers.
I take that as a compliment. I embody and live in and approve of every word of that. Was that meant to be an insult to the show? Because if so, it did not land.
It is the only show that's made my oldest child cry. Like,
mission accomplished.
From pure heartbreak. And it was over some little marshmallow dude things. Like, I did not understand it. It was definitely a boy thing.
They are called the adipose.
Yes, those.
They're living figures made of fat. It's a beautiful storyline, I promise. There is absolutely no way of describing any episode of that show to where it does not sound absolutely batshit insane. And that's part of what I love about it. Like, one of the things I love are shows where if you pick them up, like in C2, like in like the middle of an episode, like trying to explain to somebody how any of it connects or what any of the context is borderline impossible.
Oh yeah.
Doctor Who is that distilled. There's almost no other facet to the show. It is literally how do we confuse the normies, and it executes it correctly.
Literally, every time I walk in and they're watching it, there's a different person being the doctor. And I'm like, what happened?
That's the point! I bet you get mad when James Bond changes. Oh my God, Nicole.
Oh yeah, probably. I don't know. It doesn't work for my brain.
Okay.
Yeah, we can definitely take a turn on this. This could be an hour long podcast.
Let's redo that intro. Welcome back.
I didn't mean to piss off all the Doctor Who people. It's a great show. It really
We're
is.
Called Whovians, by the way. I just need to make that absolutely clear.
I gotta be politically correct.
I will strip this jersey off and show you my Doctor Who tattoos. Do not.
Oh my God.
We did promise tasteful nudity.
It would not be tasteful.
Let's wait a little bit till we have some more wine. Wow. Nicole, please save us. What sours your mash?
People that pay $100 bills for a $2 drink at the gas station. Like, honestly, I want to murder somebody when they do that.
Especially wouldn't bother me so much if every single time they didn't look surprised. Like,
right?
That's the part that bothers me is every time they're like, I can't break.
I don't have change. And then they're like, what do you mean you don't have change? And it's like, I'm not a bank. It's a gas station.
People who have American Express are like that as well, which drives me a little bit. My father-in-law, who I love you, Frank, I do. But the fact that you still go places, bring nothing, no cash, no MasterCard, no Visa, And if they don't take American Express, act like someone farted in church and are just deeply like someone nurpled the fucking Pope, and you are just deeply offended. You know this is going to happen. This happens at least once a month. It just blows my mind. That also sours my mash, Justin.
I can tell there was literally the theme of the 1990s that they don't take American Express. That was literally the thing that we took away from the 90s was no one takes American Express, and I cannot believe people are still doing this. I will say I'm one of those people who pays with cash. I'm one of the few people who I know that actually carries cash. But I also have plastic. Like it is sort of a dick move to be like, you knew you were going in for a soda. You knew it was not going to be $90. You don't need to whip out a hundo. Just
You're
fucking pay
inflation,
it.
Justin. Inflation.
It's
It could have been a hundo.
it. Look, man, I don't know what's going on with Utah. I understand,
The
but
fact that they're all rolling around with $100 bills in their pockets, I'm like, where are you getting your money, guys?
like yeah,
Like,
like who carries that? I mean, I can't. I do sometimes carry a $100 bill when my wife lets me in my money clip, but I'm also the only person I know who carries a money clip. anyway.
so true story. All the way back when I was like 19 years old, I was working at a front end of a grocery store, and one of the other guys that was working there, he's what I would refer to as a lifer. That is to say that he's not going anywhere. I swear he's still probably working there if he's not dead from meth. But he used to in he'd always carry this big bundle of cash, and this thing was fat. And you look at that, it's just $100 bill right there, and he's just sitting there, fat, looking flush. I swear to God, it would be nothing but singles that he would like triple fold and always make sure one $100 bill is on the outside so that he looked like he had money. And the worst part was he would tell everybody this. So I don't know who he was trying to fool, but he it was really important to his personality to always have that hundo on the outside.
See, and I always keep I go the opposite, smallest to largest in the middle. So like the core of the money clip is the largest bills.
Yeah, because I'm gonna lose it if I
Yeah,
don't.
exactly.
I keep the stripper coupons on the outside.
Exactly. My wife doesn't let me do that, but yeah, exactly.
She makes you pay full price.
She does. Yeah, I know, that's ridiculous. That is
Oh my
ridiculous. I've got an interesting sours my mash. I've been told multiple times, and we can go down the rabbit hole on The Bear at some point, but I've been told multiple times that I should watch The Bear. Everyone who's told me about this show, who's told me to watch it, is not in the hospitality industry. Everyone that is in the hospitality industry has said, don't watch it. You will have Vietnam level flashbacks. You will wind up in a corner sobbing from all of the trauma that you remember. And my mom most recently was like, you should watch this show. And I had to inform her. I guess she didn't know. So one of my first jobs I started as a prep cook and worked my way up to the line. I was still in high school and I worked really hard. And the chef who was there, this sort of Scandinavian guy with a ponytail, just one of those, clearly he was destined to become a chef. He would smoke a crack pipe and like on his break. And he offered it to me multiple times. And I don't know how my mom got on this conversation. She was like, oh, you have to watch the show, The Bear, blah, blah, blah. And there's drugs and there's this and there's that. And I was like, do you not
I
remember?
love her. I love her pitch.
Yeah.
No, son, you have to watch this. There's
Yeah,
drugs.
like I'm like, do you not remember? So the place was called Coogan's. It was a microbrewery. It was a really cool place. It had a cool vibe, like pizzas, you know, very like Spago-esque food. Something like there was a roasted garlic, spinach, you know, shrimp pizza, shit like that.
And a lot of crack.
Yeah, so basically again, 90s food. And so, yeah, a lot of crack, a lot of drugs were around, and she had no idea that I had been exposed to that kind of shit. And I'm like, what did you think my career path had been? Like, are you? It is just the people who aren't in the industry don't realize just how rampant alcoholism, drug abuse,
Oh, yeah.
sexual abuse, but abuse, like across the board, was. And so that really just sours my mash that people are not ignorant, but it's like they watch these shows of like Gordon Ramsay and all these other people, and they think, oh, that's really fun. And I'm like, I hate Gordon Ramsay as a person, as a TV personality, as an ethereal being. Like, I just find these people irredeemable. But anyway, I
Well, I
think.
definitely think it's one of those things. Like people think that the Gordon Ramsay experience, the Bobby Flay experience, you know, all that, they see that and think that is really what it's like. And then something like The Bear is like the Game of Thrones to the Lord of the Rings of everything else. It's really not. The Bear, that's the thing about The Bear. And I'm actually, have you actually watched it, Justin? Have you listened to any of these people? It is the best excuse I've ever had to curl up in a ball and cry in the shower. But I will say it is definitely worth watching. Absolutely incredible show. But part of what makes it so incredible is it's the only thing that I've ever seen that has absolutely spot on nailed the experience of what it's like to be in the hospitality industry, what it's like to work in a kitchen, what it's like to run restaurants. Kind of reminds me, my dad's military, and like he used to hate any sort of like military fiction. Because all he could focus on was all the little areas that were completely not what it's like to actually be in the military. And then we saw Band of Brothers, and that was an entirely different thing. Like it's completely co-signed. Like I've never met a veteran who watched that and wasn't like, yeah, they kind of fucking nailed it. Like
Fucking nailed it.
that, The Bear is our Band of Brothers.
Got
And yeah, I'm really hoping every veteran who hears me say that does not think that I'm drawing a
it.
direct correlation between what we're
Yeah.
doing, but it's fucking hard, guys. It's hard.
It is. I made the mistake during my stage at a famous restaurant in Chicago, Michelin and all that fun stuff. I made the mistake of having my hands full of something and I closed the oven door with my foot.
Oh.
You would have thought I was paratrooping into fucking Nazi-controlled Germany the way that the entire brigade jumped on me. I obviously was not asked back, but I thought I was not going to make it out of there. I mean, you've never seen so many white people so angry.
It was a really rough Waffle House you were
It was, yeah. Smothered and smothered and covered, baby. But anyway, speaking of food, because we are talking about the foodstuffs today, we are a ramble organization. We're swig. We used to say swiggers. We decided not to use that term.
Thank
We
God.
do swig, and we still ramble. So let's jump in a little bit about what we're talking about today, which is cheese.
I love
Oh,
cheese.
who doesn't love cheese?
Bad
Bad
I
people.
don't trust people that don't love
I
cheese.
genuinely, yeah, and I'm asking the audience here, if you do not love cheese, write to us and say, I'm a horrible person at swingandramble.com.
My 7-year-old daughter does not like cheese, and she's shiesty as shit. So yeah,
I
no,
can't. I can't even.
I'm absolutely about judging, prejudging anybody who does not like cheese, because
That
what
is.
isn't there to love? This is a beautiful crafted food that's equally good on a hamburger just being done on a cookout in the backyard as it is on a McDonald's Big Mac, as it is on something at a fine dining restaurant, or even just on a charcuterie board, aka adult Lunchables. What is not to love about cheese? It's one of the most versatile things that humans have ever really created. And especially on a podcast about beautiful crafted beverages from pretty much every different category you can imagine, cheese has all that. Styles, history, provenance, diverse flavors, use occasions, that's a beautiful thing. So anybody who's not about cheese, man, you got something wrong with you.
I agree. Years ago, we thought about doing a cheese and whiskey episode. And while we were doing the research, I came across Macallan. They wrote a book, like a 13-page book on whiskey and cheese pairing. And I'm like, I'm about this. Like Macallan got into the game, the cheese game. So, shall we talk cheese? Shall we talk about what we're drinking with our cheese? Who's got the cheese?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fantastic idea. So I'm happy to go ahead and jump on in first and foremost. So I don't know if we've actually mentioned this past, but for anybody who isn't aware, not only am I an advanced Cicerone, but I'm also a certified cheese scholar through the University of Wisconsin, which I promise is a
Fancy.
real thing. I was actually one of the
Fancy.
first 100 in the world, which was pretty cool. And
That's a massive flex.
It is an
Yeah.
enormous flex of finding a reason to buy a shit ton of cheese and pretend that it's a job. So no, the cheese industry is incredible. Cheese is incredible, but one of the things that's so amazing about it is its versatility. So even though for a lot of folks I'm the beer guy, and especially here with Justin being so heavy on the spirits, with us all kind of bringing our own background into things, wanted to kind of mix it up a little bit. So a couple of the things that I've brought to just do some pairings on is actually not beer at all. First, Tozai. So Tozai
Nice.
is actually a Junmai sake from Kyoto in Japan. For anybody who doesn't know, Junmai just means all rice. It means you're not doing any sort of bought-in liquor, bought-in spirits to go ahead and boost that alcohol content. Not necessarily a positive or negative. A lot of people hear a lot of the terms around sake, assuming it's like a quality kind of thing. It's not. Daiginjo doesn't necessarily mean it's better or worse than something it's not. But Tozai itself, beautiful contemporary sake, a lot of like white floral notes, hints of citrus as well, a little bit of like almost like a Meyer lemon, which is going to play in ironically to other cheese that I'm not pairing with that. But just a little bit of umami, a little bit of yeasty character. Anybody who's not super familiar with sake, it's actually made very differently than most other fermented beverages. It uses something called parallel fermentation. So what they actually do is pitch a mold called koji. It doesn't sound great, but yeah, I promise it's delicious. And that works on the rice at the same time as the yeast. So the koji actually turns the starches in the rice into sugar. Yeast eats the sugars and then shits out carbon dioxide and alcohol, and ta-da, sake. So it tends to be a little different from most other ferments, though, because it's a little more umami. You get a little more of that savory quality. Also has a lot more lactic acid than most other fermented alcohols. So pairs beautifully with cheese. It's light enough and high enough alcohol enough to cut through some of that fatty content. So for that, I got some brie. Hard to go wrong with brie. There we go, big old wheel there that I'm taking the most adorable little slice out of. So it is a double cream cheese from France. So these tend to be, they have a bloomy rind. So that outside is actually a mold itself that actually works on the cheese, helps build up this like really grassy, lightly bitter, lightly earthy note. Brie is something I think feel like most people are pretty familiar with, but having all those citrusy notes kind of play into it, can't really go wrong. Really brightens it, uplifts it, cuts through some of that fatty kind of content, and that kind of mushroomy note from the mold really ties into the umami from the sake itself. So all this is really one long excuse for me to go ahead and eat some cheese and have some sake. Also got some bruschettini from Sturi right here, a little olive oil, nothing too crazy, not competing. And all this is really just to tie in some flavors together. Justin, I don't know if in your background with whiskey and spirits, you've done much in the pairing world yourself.
I started my booze career because everyone was asking me as a young cook and as a young chef what I would pair with XYZ. And when you're 19, you don't know these things. So that actually forced me to go into a wine shop and start asking, hey, could I have a job? Because people are always asking me these stupid questions. So it really started me on the journey of not just learning about beverages, but really tying in food. I am drinking before I get into the my cheese and my wine. I'm dying to know what Nicole has.
I've come from the mom who puts chicken nuggets in a microwave background,
Love it.
with ex-Mormon ties, so I never got into the alcohol stuff. So I have microwavable queso and chips. That's my cheese with my Monster.
Nice. I'll be honest though. See,
I'm not mad
I
at
love
that.
this stuff because that is one of, and we were joking offline that the only app I have on my phone for any sort of like restaurant or food thing is actually for Taco Bell. That's 100% true. I have eaten at Taco Bell more than I've eaten at any restaurant in my entire life. That includes the restaurant I used to run. I love Taco Bell. I love good, bad food, and there's nothing wrong with that. One of the things I tell people, because it can be really there's a big gate in front of like pairing as a concept. People feel like, oh man, I don't even want to try and do this because I'm going to fuck it up. And it's not really what it is at all. The thing about pairing is if you enjoy eating or drinking two things together. I mean, it's all going in the same bowl. Take that for however you want it. But if you're eating and drinking and you enjoy that experience, then you're doing it right. There is no wrong, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. The reason that these like pairing lists, the reason not all these concepts are out there, all it is that for the majority of people, and I say the majority because it's not for everybody, there are going to be certain combinations that tend to work and ones that tend not to work in the same way that, brushing your teeth and then drinking orange juice for the vast majority of people is not a very pleasant experience. That sounds absolutely disgusting. And it's not that there's not probably some weirdo out there who's just mainlining Minute Maid after brushing his teeth, but it's important to understand that these are kind of guides, they're overarching themes, they're good starting points, but half the fun is finding the things that work for you. And if it doesn't work for you, it's okay. The entire concept of pairing red wine with chocolate is entirely because wine and chocolate suck together, and the wine industry has such a cope about trying to make that work. I'm not judging. I also work in the wine industry. It's a facet of what we do. So, no, I think microwave queso and Monster Energy drink might be the purest pairing on here.
That is a flawless pairing.
Always works.
I am about that. I'm not an energy drink person, but I would try that because that sounds fun. And people think culinary trained cooks, chefs, sommeliers, whatever title you want to give people, that we eat very well. Let me put it to you this way. I had a ham sandwich that my wife made, which was awesome, and some chips for dinner. Like that's I and my favorite meal, like my death row meal, which we will get into in another episode, is like hot box chicken that's been sitting around since like 11 a.m. and it's now 1 a.m. and it's been sitting there all day after everyone's been served. There's four portions left with a sauce that's congealed. Anyway, so my pairing, I popped open a wine, a coupe, Bien Nacido Roussanne, which is a Rhone varietal white grape. Beautiful minerality. These are highly ageable white wines. This one happens to be old enough. Just old enough for Trump to want to hit on. It is
Jesus.
the 2013 Coupe Bien Nacido Hillside Estate Roussanne, and it's what, 12 years old? And it is drinking. I don't know if you guys can see that. The audience can't see it, but I
Oh, yeah.
know you guys can see the color on this. It is bright. It is fresh. It has beautiful minerality, great acidity. I read a review from someone at Wine Advocate years ago when they wrote it, and they said, oh, it'll probably last for 2 to 3 years, or 3 to 4 years, I think. Fuck them. This thing is drinking. I could let this go another 10 years, and honestly, it would still be really good quality. It still has good fruit, great acidity, tiny bit of salinity, and I've paired it with Asiago, a 5-month-old Asiago. Why? Because I like Asiago, and it's what I had.
I love how scientific we got with that. I do also love like wine negotiants putting something like, drink within 4 to 5 years on a wine bottle that can age for 10 plus. That is the wine equivalent of planned obsolescence.
Yeah,
Like, listen,
yeah.
stop hoarding that thing. Just drink it the hell already. That way we can get back to selling you more wine.
I had a conversation with a distiller many years ago, and he said he a Scotch distiller, and he asked me, well, what do you think of this bottle? I said, it's great. The collectors are going to love it. He said, what do you mean, collectors? I said, well, this is going to sit on someone's back bar at home for 10 years. And he was shocked that people save whiskey that long. He'd
Oh,
never
that's
heard
always
of
my
it.
problem.
He'd never heard of that.
That, well, I think that means he has a problem more than anything else. Yeah. What do you mean they don't drink the whiskey immediately before they even get home? You got a
Exactly.
cup
Yeah,
holder
he's
in the
downing it
car.
in the
Pop
car
that
like we
thing.
do in Edinburgh.
It's only a 750.
So yeah, I am loving this wine. And to your point about chocolate and red wine, I made the suggestion the other day. I'm hosting an event in Texas. We are having a bottle of one of the most expensive bottles of wine in the world. I made the suggestion that we leave it to the end and we throw some chocolate in there and every single person's face was just tortured with offense. And I am not one to give a shit anymore what people think because I think it's a fucking great idea. Like, not like, I'm not talking like, let's open a Hershey's bar. I'm thinking let's do chocolate mousse or chocolate souffle or some kind of, cake or something that would be interesting.
Hey, now, a Hershey's bar was Nicole's next pair.
Yeah,
First of all,
literally.
well, excuse me. That's the chocolate episode, people, which we're doing for Thanksgiving, just so
Just a
you know.
bag of chocolate chips, it's fine.
I fucking love a bag of chocolate chips. I
The
will
same.
I take the big bag of walnuts from Costco and chocolate chips, and that is like my trail mix
That
with
is my dad's favorite dessert, is just a handful of walnuts and chocolate chips. Absolutely.
fuck yeah. And if I really want them, like if I'm traveling, I'll throw some Cheerios in there so it makes it look like a real trail mix, but it's really just chocolate chips and walnuts.
That makes it look like you have kids.
My
Who's looking
wife
at
thinks.
Cheerios in this like chocolate chip and like walnut trail mix? It's like, now that classes it out.
It does glass it up. My wife thinks I am a 12-year-old lunatic because I like Cheerios with it. She's like, why don't you love the roof of your mouth? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Oh, everybody likes Cheerios.
Doesn't
It's
like
the only
Cheerios.
thing that tastes like cardboard you can get every kid in America to eat.
Exactly.
Literally.
With zero nutritional value. It's amazing.
Which it's not negative nutritional value, which still makes it the healthiest cereal on the market.
Exactly. So a cheese scholar. Aside from the
Certified.
fact that that sounds super made up, tell us a little bit more and let's jump into some cheese shit.
Absolutely. No, so the University of Wisconsin, and this may surprise everybody, but Wisconsin has a lot of cheese. So the University of Wisconsin instituted a certification program effectively to give people a baseline for demonstrating their knowledge of cheese, being able to really benchmark themselves very similarly to some of the sommelier programs that are out there, Cicerone program in the beer world, WSET for spirits, wine, et cetera. Very similar concept. There've been some pre-existing programs, but most of them required a certain number of like hours working within the industry, somewhere on the order of like 40,000. So that wasn't gonna happen. So I've got other things to do, like go broke in other industries like beer. Can't go broke in cheese simultaneously. That'd just be ridiculous. But yeah, took the program. It was absolutely amazing. I got to tell my nephew, who was going to UW at the time, that we were going to school together. He didn't think that was nearly as funny as I did while I was cramping his style. But outside of that, gives you a really good baseline. They have a fantastic program with a great community. They have an app. There's a ton of engagement, ton of interaction on there. They send you so much free swag. I had a bucket hat that's covered in different types of cheese that I gifted to my daughter and was gonna actually wear on this episode for y'all's entertainment. She did not find it nearly as funny. I was trying to take it back. She loves that thing. I've got like five or six pairs of socks, a pennant, and like a blanket. Like, yeah, they take care of the graduates. So if you want a bunch of free cheese swag, yeah, definitely take a look at the program, and they're about to institute their next level up. Which will be the equivalent of like a certified Cicerone or a advanced sommelier here soon. Yeah, probably, I think by the end of the year.
So, I can attest that in Wisconsin, the side dish to cheese is cheese. They fry cheese on top of cheese. Wisconsin, you're right, is about cheese. It's called Cheese State University. I Googled it because I was now I want to know. And sure enough, it's a thing. Cheese State University, guys, is a thing. It says, join us in the Ivy League of cheese education. And I am
Oh,
all about this.
they have leaned all the way in.
I am
I
all
love
about.
everything about it. It is one of the best ways I have ever spent way too much of my time, energy, and money. And given how many stupid things I spend my time, energy, and money on, that was a low bar to hit. But no, it's been absolutely fantastic. I was already a huge fan and aficionado for cheese as it was. And again, it's all the same things that got me into pursuing certifications and spirits, pursuing certifications in cider and beer, in non-alcoholic beverages. I just love to learn, and most importantly, love to really learn about things that get me fat and kill me quicker. So, why not add cheese to the list?
This is I'm enrolling. Let's just start with
Please
that.
do.
I'm definitely gonna do that because why wouldn't I want another certification?
This one will also not get you any further anywhere in your career. So I just
Oh,
want to
then
preface
amazing.
that for
That's
everybody.
what I want. I was talking with my father-in-law about this earlier today, about how I only collect degrees and certifications that will never advance me in any way, shape, or form, because why would I want to do that?
Be way easier to spend your time and money on something that actually pay off. I don't know what that's like, so you're gonna have to tell me. But so far, no, it's cheese is a beautiful thing. I mean, cheese has been with us for about as long as people have been able to, process lactose and really enjoy dairy products. Something that isn't nearly as old as our ability to process alcohol, but still, cheese is ancient. And the beautiful thing is, it's not only something that has enormous amount of depth to it, but almost anything that you're going to be drinking has got cheese that can go well with it. Because cheese is salty, it's fatty, but it can be incredibly robust and intense and rich. It can be pungent and in your face, something like a blue cheese. It can be super light, super fresh, something like a mozzarella. So you got a ton of range there. So just about anything you want to pair it with is going to be good to go. And I've got actually another pairing as well, really, to go ahead and illustrate that. So mix up the cheese a little bit. I don't know if everybody who's listening is familiar with Cypress Grove, but Cypress Grove is one of the most awarded creameries in the US, one of the most awarded cheese makers. They're out of California. They're Purple Haze, very, very famous. But pretty much everything that they have done top to bottom, they absolutely crush. And this one right here is actually their Meyer Lemon and Honey goat cheese. Their entire portfolio, I believe, is all goat cheeses. Super fresh, super light. Went ahead, same exact cracker as before, but this time I want to pair it with something a little different. So those fresh goat cheeses, they tend to be relatively acidic, super bright, super fresh, perfect summertime eating. And so I wanted to mix up with something that's actually going to complement and kind of round it out a little bit. So one of the things about goat cheeses is that acidity and that salt level need something to balance it out. So what I'm drinking right now is actually the Château d'Armagnan de Romay. This is a Sauternes from Bordeaux. So Sauternes is a type of super sweet wine. What they actually allow to happen is a type of beneficial mold that's been kind of my running theme today. Called botrytis, grows on the grapes. And botrytis basically kills the living shit out of anything else. You've probably actually had strawberries in your fridge at some point in time contract botrytis. It's not uncommon with strawberries. Makes them absolutely worthless. But on wine grapes in just the right conditions, it'll actually go ahead and puncture little holes deep into the grape. That actually allows more of the juice to evaporate out, and they have an enzyme that kills off the yeast that does fermentation. All this means is it has a tendency to super concentrate the sugars in the wine grapes, as well as make it to where the yeast itself will actually cease its fermentation before finishing it out. So what you get is this beautiful, golden, nutty, but also super acidic, super citrus forward, incredibly complex, sweet wine that's just absolutely perfect for cleansing your palate of just that mouth-coating feeling that you get from the goat cheese. Those honeyed, nutty qualities go perfect with the actual honey that's in this cheese itself. And then that grassy note you're getting out of the goat cheese, just a perfect complement. Helps kind of bring some of that sweetness back, makes it a little more earthy, and it's able to match the intensity pretty much perfectly top to bottom. So this is basically an excuse for me to open a way too expensive wine and drink it on camera. But cheers, y'all. Can't go wrong.
So my nerdy question is going to be the vintage. Did you choose an older Sauternes, or are you popping a younger one?
My mouth is full of goat cheese and cracker right now, as you can probably tell just from
I
listening at
will.
home. But this is actually a 2018.
Nice.
In
While you
general.
chew, I'll. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, hit us with it.
Yeah. So the reason I asked about that is young Sauternes is fresh. It's got this beautiful nutty quality, sometimes lemongrass, a beautiful herbaceousness to them. And as they age, and Sauternes can age for a very long time. Speaking of incredibly expensive bottles, Chateau Yquem, some other producers, they make wine. that can last 40, 50, 60 years. I've got some 20-year-olds myself, some 03s, that because Sauternes was such a great year. 03 was such a great year for Sauternes. That as they age, they tend to get darker. They tend to get nuttier. They tend to sort of become this, what is the, like white crimson kind of quality to them. Just brilliant, brilliant wines. And if you have a charcuterie board, you should 100% have both a young and an old Sauternes to just sort of see. I was at a dinner many, many, many years ago, six courses, and they paired everything with Sauternes. And then the dessert came and they pulled out a regular Margaux, Bordeaux red wine. So it was to showcase the versatility of Sauternes, which is such an amazing wine. And if you don't, if you can't get a hold of Sauternes, you can do things like Tokaj, you can do things like
If you can't
Vinsanto.
get a hold of Sauternes and you're doing things like Tokaj, that's like being you can't get a hold of a Camry and so you're buying a freaking Cadillac. That
Yeah.
is so expensive.
You know what I mean?
I didn't break out the Tokaj that I have in my fridge for this. I like you guys, but you're gonna have to earn your way for that. But Nicole, have you had Sauternes before, or have you heard of it? Because it's definitely a wine that's actually at risk of extinction because it's relatively unknown, relatively hard for people to find in the best of circumstances.
I haven't. I only started drinking a couple years ago, and wine is not something I've had to experience a whole lot of, but I love learning about it because it's really interesting to me. So my question, because I hate blue cheese. Like, I do not like it. So is there something that pairs with it that's going to make it taste better?
Blue cheese?
Sauternes.
A
It's
100%.
actually
Okay,
that
bet.
is actually alongside port, one of the classic combos. But the funny part is, even being a certified cheese scholar, I don't care for blue cheese either. And that is one of those flavors. And Justin, you guys can't see this at home, just spit out his drink. I'm pretty sure he's considering whether or not to flip me off. blue cheese is one of those things. It's kind of like smoked beer in the beer world, where it is very divisive. And it's one of those things that you might just not have a taste for, even if it's something that conceptually and intellectually you're interested in. And for me,
Yeah,
that's
that makes
100% the
sense.
case. I love everything about the story, the way it's made, the
Yeah.
idea behind it is so beautiful and incredible. And then I got to taste it. And that's where it all falls apart for me. But Justin, please don't throw something all the way from California to hit me in South Carolina because I can see it starting to bubble up.
I'm going full ghost here, as always. However, to answer the original question, and I cannot believe I promise I'm still here. To answer the question, before I give a lecture on blue cheese, Nicole, take a really good, either an olive oil or like a sesame cracker. Take a
Okay.
little bit of like Cabrales if you want to try like a Spanish blue cheese, or a Gorgonzola if you want to do Italian. Have it with a little bit of like fig jam
Okay.
and a sweet wine. It'll help cut through everything. Do a Sauternes, do a port if you can find that. You could even do some older sherries. Those would be fine. Pedro Ximenez, things like that would be really nice. But you want to cut that blue cheese with a little bit of sweetness. Honestly, almost everyone that I know doesn't like blue cheese either, and
Yeah,
that's
it's
fine.
super overpowering.
It is.
Yeah.
It 100% is. But I mean, a blue cheese bacon burger is like one of the best things that man has ever made. You've got salt, you've got funk, you've got earth, you've got fat, you've got burger juice, you've got bacon grease, you've got bun. If it's on a pretzel bun, oh my God, even more, better.
We are 100% going to need to circle back and do some sort of burger episode. That is going to
We're
need to happen.
100% doing this. You should join us in San Diego if you can. I'm hoping Nicole is able to come out. I'm hoping Violet's able to come out. We've got an event that we're doing down there. I'm hoping to record some episodes, but we could definitely do some fun pairings there. But for blue cheese, yeah, it's a tough sell. A lot of people hate it. Some people don't. I know that was it Midnight Moon from yeah, it's a their version of a blue cheese. So there are some really, really great ones out there and some subtle ones. So we can maybe we'll post some on the website when we post this episode. We'll post a couple of recommendations on blue cheese. But for you audience out there, if you don't like blue cheese, let us know. Write to again, still a horrible person at swigandramble.com.
And definitely, if you do like them, let us know what your favorites are.
Yes,
That's the other
please.
nice thing about blue cheese is you have such an enormous range, from the extremely pungent to the extremely mild and pretty much everything in between with different qualities, different notes. Like, don't be afraid to let us know what you like. And that's part of the challenge of cheese. Like wine, there's such breadth to it and has even less of an organizing structure than simple varietals that it's easy to get lost down it. So recommendations are always welcome, even among people who do it for a living.
Did we hear your review, Nicole, of your pairing? Could you do you want to do a review for us?
My queso and my monster.
Yeah.
Please
It
do.
was fucking
Love
amazing.
to hear this.
Fucking amazing.
Fucking
Done.
amazing.
Beautiful. 12 out of 5 stars.
There it is.
That's literally what I'm gonna eat for dinner. So.
Nice. There you go.
Love
Perfect.
everything
Amazing.
about it. So, Justin, tell us a little bit about some of the principles behind pairing. What really goes into when you're trying to figure out how ahead of time, maybe not even and had the opportunity to try two things together. How do you know what you're walking into as to whether or not you should be looking for certain things or whether or not something's going to be kind of a match made in heaven early on?
There are a few schools of thought. One is like for like. So if you want to do something sweet, you want to keep it sweet. If you want to do something fatty, you want to pair it with as similar as you can. The other sort of principle is contrasting. Spicy food with sweet things. Sauterne and spicy food is an amazing pairing. So those two realistic principles sort of guide most pairing attitudes. Oh, I'm having red wine. I'm gonna have it with chocolate. I'm gonna have it with a steak. I'm gonna have it with something fatty and meaty. Or if it's a lighter red like Pinot or a Gamay or something like that, I'm gonna do it with game because you know lamb or pheasant, something like that, where you really you have a funk to the meal and you want something that's going to cut through the funk a little bit. I sort of subscribe to do whatever the absolute flying fuck you want. That is my motto. That being said, I have recommended people pair Gewürztraminer with steak before, and I've gotten looks from people like you're out of your mind. And they go home, they come back, and they say, wow, that actually worked really well. It's because people's palates are vastly different. And you can have what you like, and you can play and test and goof around. Make yourself a miniature Lunchables box of five different things: chocolate chips, M&Ms, three different cheeses, four different types of cracker, and just taste them, see what you like about them individually, and then say, okay, I kind of want this with an Oregon Pinot Noir. I kind of want this with a German Riesling. I kind of want this with a South African Pinotage, you know? So my recommendation for anyone to pair anything is experimentation. Go out there and have fun, and don't ever let anyone sort of badmouth your own palate. Also, experiment with restaurants. They've got a ton of restaurants out there will have a pairing menu. They'll have the chef's pairing menu, depending on where you go. The other important thing, I cannot stress this enough. French fries go with everything, not just champagne. Go out there and get your fucking fry on.
If you don't find something you don't like with the French fries, that means whatever you're having with the French fries is wrong, not the fries. Don't blame the
Don't
fries.
blame the fries.
Exactly.
Never blame the fries.
You don't need that sort of negativity in your life. Good Lord.
Exactly.
But 100%, it's the big thing I tell people is, stop thinking these as two different things. At the end of the day, What you're drinking, what you're eating. I made the joke earlier, they're going in the same hole, but they're going in the same damn hole. You know, at the end of the day, you're eating and drinking. A lot of times, those are all getting mixed up. Those flavors are hanging around. So, what you're drinking is an element of your total dish. And once you start thinking about it that way, it starts making a lot more sense. It starts seeming a lot less arcane, a lot less, just obtuse, and it starts feeling a lot more natural. You're just picking another ingredient for what you're having today, just like you're picking a side dish, just like you're picking a sauce. It's really not so different.
I
It's
have a
going to change
question.
with everything else. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm circling back around because my ADHD brain's catching up to me, but like you were talking about
You're in good
wine.
company.
Wine and chocolate not going together, right? Like, that's why did they push it so much in Valentine's Day? Like, all of society is a box of chocolates and a thing of wine. Like, that doesn't make sense to me now.
Well, when you're drunk and having a natural aphrodisiac like chocolate, it really helps.
Oh, okay. That's
It's
why.
marketing gobbledygook as well. Like you how do you sell more wine around Valentine's Day? Is you make pairings because, well, it's the chocolate holiday, not the wine holiday, you know? So yeah, it's
That just like blew my mind of
yeah.
information because
For
I'm like,
what it's
what a
worth, milk
second.
chocolate actually does go a little better with wine than dark chocolate. Part of the challenge with dark chocolate is it's naturally bitter, and that can make the bitter qualities in wine. It'll either overpower white wine in a lot of cases, or for red wine, it can take those tannins, those bitter kind of things that give you that like cat's tongue, kind of like dry feeling in your mouth. It'll actually turn those up to 11. And the fact that it's relatively assertive, and the fact that it has a natural level of sweetness in a lot of cases, which is hard to balance with a lot of wines if they're not sweet themselves. Sweet's notoriously challenging to balance, like dessert and wine, unless you're talking about something with some sweetness itself, like a Sauternes, is actually not a good pairing. Wine's versatile, but one of the things that makes wine pairings such an obsession for the wine industry is the fact that of all the different beverages, wine's actually one of the worst for pairings. It is an incredibly versatile beverage. I love wine. I drink at least as much of it as I do anything else, but it's definitely one that has a more narrow scope of flavors in a lot of cases, and one that's not as food friendly as some of the other beverage categories. And that's not to its detriment. Subtlety can be beauty, and simplicity can lead to complexity, but it does mean that you don't have nearly as much to play with as you do, for example, with beer, which not only has a much wider range of flavors, partly by virtue of having a whole extra ingredient in the mix of how to make it, but also the fact that bread goes with everything. Beer's just liquid bread. Cider is incredible for pairing because even though
Amazing.
it does have a very narrow window of flavors, apples are incredibly versatile as far as what they pair with. And it is so easy to be able to tie foods into cider in a way that's not nearly so easy as it is with wine. You can think of that as a dinner table. Think about how often, outside of just snacking grapes, you're actually using grapes in other dishes. It's not a whole lot of them. Grapes
Twice.
aren't super
Two
versatile.
whole dishes.
And that's about
Yeah.
it.
So it's interesting because for almost all of humankind, water was not really consumed. So you had to have beer, you had to have wine, you had to have some sort of alcohol because it was the only real safe thing to drink. And this is a global phenomenon. We think of very expensive wines as things that just have to stand on their own. And same with other things, same with spirits, and same with this and that. Oh, it has to stand on its own. But that's not necessarily the case. You can absolutely and should have open a bottle with dinner because wines were originally made, at least the old world style of wines, were designed almost exclusively to be on the dinner table, to be on the lunch table. You didn't just have a glass of specific table wine outside of the meal. You had other things for after dinner, you had other things for social events, but there was almost always sort of what we would consider a charcuterie board. There were grapes, there was dried fruits, there were other fruits, there were fresh fruits, there were crackers or bread and cheeses. And I
And
don't
this
think we have
continued
time.
all the way into the 90s when Lunchables was born.
Yeah. And you're right. A Lunchable is really just charcuterie boards are really just fancy Lunchables, We don't have time in this episode to really go into the Benedictine versus the Cistercian monks and all the different cheeses that they developed to go with the beers that they also developed. They literally designed these cheeses to go with the breads that they had, based off of their beer recipes. So we don't have time for
Was
that,
as
but
much as much a part of monastic life as was beer, as was wine, and a little history lesson for the less historically inclined folks listening, and that's just fine. But during the Middle Ages, when the Roman Empire fell, there's my white dude thinking about the Roman Empire too much moment. The Roman Empire is my Roman Empire, damn it! But when the
And
Roman
apparently
Empire
Doctor
fell.
Who.
That is also my Roman Empire. I have a lot of Roman empires, just like there were many Roman empires in the real world. But that's an entirely other history-based episode we can get into. But when the Roman Empire fell, effectively there was a huge vacuum. People needed something to help bring structure and connection between their community and other communities, and to be able to really provide a sense of authority and guidance. And the church really stepped in Western Europe, at least during that period, to do so, since they were one of the few institutions that spread beyond that hill over there compared to everyone else. Your local lord was just that guy, and your neighbors were just your neighbors, but the church went all the way to Rome and beyond. And so it made the churches very powerful, but a lot of those monasteries, these monastic orders of monks who took vows of poverty, one of the flip sides of that is they still did need to make enough in order to buy some of the basic supplies they couldn't make in-house. They're as self-sufficient as they could. So for a lot of those monks, what they did was they took to dairy cattle and sheep and other livestock that they would use in some cases to make clothing from the sheep. But for the most part, most of it was for dairy. It was to make cheese that would be sold just to get enough to pay for their very basic needs. And the rest of it would actually be given to the poor, given to people who were in need in the area. Same went for beer and then wine in some areas where that was more conducive to grape growing versus barley growing. And so beer and cheese were not just something that they ate and drank. That was also a means for providing not just for the monastery, but also for the community. And that created these really deep ties that to this day, some of the most lauded beers in the world come from Cistercian monasteries across Europe and formerly in Spencer, Massachusetts, of all places. Same goes for some of the top cheeses in the world. Chimay, which is one of those breweries, still making Abbey beer at the Abbey as part of the Trappist order. They also make award-winning cheeses across a whole range from their own milk. So there's this beautiful history to it that really calls to today and is part of a tradition that leads to things like Velveeta and leads to things like Kraft American slices. And I don't mean that to its detriment. For me, that really is about taking this thing that, yes, I love everything from Cypress Grove. Their Humboldt Fog is one of the most important cheeses in America. Unbelievable. It's not a cheese that everybody's going to be buying. Sure as hell aren't going to be buying every day. Same goes for some of this bottle of Sauternes is worth about as much as the jersey I'm wearing, which is worth way more than any of the other clothes in my closet right now. And that's to say there still needs to be those accessible options out there for everyday use. And that includes not just for being able to democratize cheese and democratize wine, democratize beer, but also for, folks like us, to Justin's point earlier, even people in the food and the beverage industry, man, like, hey, some absolutely garbage food. I went, I've eaten like 15 Oreos today, and I'm not proud of it. They're just really good. And
Good amount of
there's
Oreos.
something to be said for that as well.
One final point, to Aaron's point. The things that we think about as luxuries now, high-end whiskey, high-end cheeses, expensive wines, expensive beers. They were born out of necessity. Cheese was a way to keep milk from going bad. If you can turn it into cheese, you can store that cheese for through the winter and you can have living. You can stay alive. They did the same thing with grain. Grain goes bad if it sits in silos. There's rats, there's mice, there's bugs, there's mold. If you can turn it into beer, you have a chance of staying alive. whiskey was cheaper to transport than grain in the early Americas. And so most, quote, farm pioneers had a still with them, and they could sell a few jugs of whiskey or a barrel of whiskey a hell of a lot cheaper than they could sell thousands of bushels of grain. So these things are born out of necessity. So just keep that in mind for all you listeners out there who don't want to spend $500 on a bottle of Pappy these days.
Monster energy drinks were come up with because LAN parties kept going all the way until 3 a.m. in the 90s, and kids needed something to keep them
Necessity.
awake while they were housing Doritos and watching South Park reruns. So, necessity
A lot easier to
breeds
get than
creativity.
Molly, you know?
Literally.
Nicole, would you like to wrap us up?
Just thanks for coming and joining us. It's been a blast. I've learned a lot, way more than I planned on. So, I hope you guys all enjoy your night. And to all the listeners out there, thanks for being a part of us. You can follow us on all of our social media platforms and stay tuned for the next round. I look forward to it.
And eat more fucking cheese.
And chocolate chips.
And walnuts.
That's it. Follow us, Justin Corey, at Wizard of Whiskey, Nicole Woolsey, at G Girl Next Door, and Violet Smith, at 420 baby underscore Violet, for more societal fuckery. Until next time, stay hot, stay curious, and always ramble responsibly.